No. Stop. No. Fuck no. That is not what you people came to hear tonight. This is what you guys came to hear.
Lotus is a leaf to the future of the new world. A born pig in front of the skin and flesh. Will the boy and his team was mad. Sing a song of magic on the hunted for us.
Before we begin today, I want to say something in regards to the recent Thy Art Is Murder drama. If you're not familiar with Thy Art Is Murder and their recent PR disaster, it's the cause of their now former frontman, CJ McMahon, who reposted a clip of Matt Walsh on his Instagram page, where in this clip, a mother is talking to her child, asking if they were a boy or a girl, to which the child says both. CJ's response to this clip naturally, literally to say this woman should be robbed of watching her child grow up and die by, quote, being burned to death. The band released their new album Godlike yesterday before we recorded this episode on September 22nd, and the band was supposed to have released it last week. Why, you ask? To re-record the vocals behind CJ's back and fire him the day of the album's release over social media, which now he's had grifters come to his defense, such as Tommy Vexed and, to a larger extreme, Ronnie Radke, to such an extreme where Ronnie, a man who vehemently claims to hate cancel culture, says we should all boycott Thy Art Is Murder as a band. Cancel culture only applies to things you like and agree with, huh, Ronnie? We detest the views of shitbags like CJ McMahon, Ronnie Radke, and Tommy Vexed. No matter who you want to marry, who you identify as, what your skin color is, as long as you love heavy music, everybody is welcome in heavy metal culture. Fuck Ronnie Radke, fuck Tommy Vexed, and fuck you, CJ. You knew better. On with the episode.
What's going on, everyone? And welcome to episode 3 of Why We Love This Band on Renegade Jukebox, part of Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. This is where we discuss bands we both love and are formative to our musical tastes. And we discuss things like how many times we've seen this band live, memories of their music, and just how much we enjoy, for the most part, these albums by these bands.
And today, our band in question is one that basically got better as they kept making music, but unfortunately, due to family and work priorities, disappeared for almost 10 years. Today's episode is on Job for a Cowboy. Mike, how did you get into this band? Because mine is probably going to be a completely different situation from yours.
Okay, so we're going back to 2007, which for me was honestly, as far as like my love for heavy metal goes, 2007 was probably the most formative year for me. This was the summer where I pretty much got obsessed with Pandora Radio. I started making new stations for like pretty much every new band that I was discovering. And this was kind of my discovery phase, where I was pretty much, for lack of a better term, opening up Pandora's box and discovering all of the best extreme genres of metal. This is where I really came to love stuff like the new wave of American heavy metal, bands like Lamb of God, Trivium, Killswitch Engage, all of that. And then I got more into like the death metal stuff, like Vader, Obituary. And then I was starting to discover deathcore, but first I listened to some stuff from Genesis. And yeah, from there, that's when I decided that, oh, okay, Job for a Cowboy is a name that I need to remember.
So how I got into the band. So remember our episode on Violence Unimagined by Cannibal Corpse, where I mentioned I knew somebody in high school who turned into a massive douchebag and was an absolute elitist shit stain?
Yeah.
Well, he was also into Job for a Cowboy, so I had no interest in the band really until maybe my final year of high school, which was around the time Demonocracy had just come out, and I sometime down the road just ended up jamming the first couple on repeat mainly, and then that's how I ended up getting hooked on them. I haven't seen them live, unfortunately, but I did meet John the Charn Rice when he was filling in for Inferno from Behemoth when they were opening for Slayer. So that's the closest I'll get to seeing Job for a Cowboy live.
Oh, that's actually really awesome.
Yeah, I still have the photo from when I met him and everything. I'll mention the best tours that happened throughout the remainder of this episode, of course. So I guess really just our general thoughts on Job for a Cowboy are this is how you do growth, evolution, and really just learn from your mistakes and develop from misfires. Like, this is a band that is an example of taking what you did before and just improving on it and just making it better. It's also kind of an example of perception is not reality to me, in that I always just associated them with the deathcore scene at the time, and just as musicians and songwriters, they were always been light years ahead of a lot of the mediocrity that came from that realm of heavy music to me, and just their production has always been stellar to me.
Yeah, I basically agree with everything you said there. And just to, we will get to our rankings, but you know, spoiler alert, I don't know how to do this. That isn't just listing their albums in like reverse chronological order as far as best to worst. Like that's how good this band has become, like, throughout their entire career.
And I guess with that in mind, normally we would start off with their first album. But in this case, we have a project that is literally too big for us to ignore. So Mike, why don't you lead us in?
Yes, we will begin with the Doom EP, released on December 6, 2005 on King of the Monsters Records, followed by a later 2006 reissue where they signed to Metal Blade Records. The album featured the notorious Pig Squeal vocals, received mixed reviews from critics, and got them a slot of 2006's Sound of the Underground tour, but went on to influence thousands of other deathcore bands, such as Angel Maker and even Whitechapel, and Nick and I fucking hate it. Here is specifically what frustrates me about this record. Like, I don't really love the songs, and I'm not really a big fan of Pig Squeals in deathcore in general, but musically, I know they have the talent. It's just the production is what tanks this for me.
Honestly, I don't have much to say on the music side of things. I have two sources quoted that can say it better than I could really articulate it. My first point is I'm going to be lazy and pull from the All Music entry that Wikipedia quotes. It is competent, but it trades sound in sounds, not songs. I honestly really am bored by all of these songs. And kind of like you said, these guys aren't bad musicians at all. It's just the riffs, I don't find that memorable, to be honest. And the drumming is fine, I guess. One part of me doesn't want to be too harsh on the band either, because they were literally just teenagers recording this. But on that same coin, Decapitated literally wrote their first album, Winds of Creation, when they were literally preteens. So this just musically reminds me also of better deathcore bands that came after the fact. Yet this is what gets the big cult following behind it. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. Then,
go ahead.
I was going to ask if you think maybe I'm trying to think, like, what exactly was popular around this time, and, you know, maybe they were specifically aiming at like a like the MySpace audience, and just kind of, I don't know, you know, pandering to that crowd, knowing that, like, they would get attention, only for their real debut to be like, no, this is what we really sound like.
I will get to a little bit of that in a minute, because my second point really is that I've mentioned that quote that I'm going to pull from is Travis Ryan and his awesome podcast appearance on Chris Garza from Suicide Silence's The Garza podcast. This was Travis describing how he feels about his own back catalog, and I feel it's apt for the music we're going to be talking about later. Start quote, "I call it the Doom EP effect. It's not that Job for a Cowboy's Doom EP was this magnificent piece of work. I think I feel inarguably, but maybe arguably, the stuff after it was objectively better. I like it because they put a lot more time and effort into it," which again says it much better than I really could. And again, like, people who are active in the death metal world, and a lot of people like me who want more than just generic chug-along breakdowns and breeze, feel the exact same way I do. Yet we have a right-wing asshat who lets bad music off the hook because it's successful, like Finn McKenty run around in his videos saying that the band should have capitalized on the Doom EP and stuck with that sound. Like, this guy seriously thinks that the music that comes after didn't deserve the underground success this thing had. God, Mike, I really fucking hate Finn.
I get it. And what one thing I am happy about is that if they wanted to be quote unquote successful, they would have, like, they maybe could have leaned into you know, the deathcore stylings of the Doom EP, but I'm glad they went a different approach with their next release.
Well, I'm going to go back to a little bit of your point even earlier. Like, the biggest cardinal sin against this thing, even Johnny Davey himself doesn't think this thing holds up.
Like, I think that right there is the nail in the coffin.
There's an interview during the pandemic that he did with Alternative Press where, granted, he said he isn't ashamed of it, nor should he be. But you do have to realize that them wanting to pursue more interesting sounds and grow up just makes the most sense, really, if you think about it. And he even briefly mentioned, before talking about potential new music from the band, he even says that they've been offered to do tours on the Doom EP only, and they've said no every time.
That is integrity.
Exactly. Like, and here's the other thing too. You aren't always going to look back on decisions you made when you were 16 years old and be happy with them. That's the other thing too. Like, that's why I think it's a more mature approach than anything Finn McKenty really does in regards to his shit videos, because it's like, dude, you got to realize that not everybody's going to act like a teenager the rest of their lives. Like, that's just not smart, period. Not smart in a musical sense, not smart in an opinion sense. And just for general life advice, don't look back and think, huh, when I was 16, that was a really good decision. Why didn't I keep doing that?
Yeah, no, they definitely made the right decision by maturing their sound.
Like, in terms of best songs, though, I don't know. Like, entities, maybe. I know it's a cop-out to kind of consider something relegated to a bonus track once they ended up signing to Metal Blade Records, but I guess it's mostly due to having a memorable guitar solo. Other than that, my final thoughts on this thing are, I actually have two things, really. One, I'm just going to get the obvious underhanded jab in, is that I really can't help but call this thing undeserving of all the tongue kisses some people bathe this thing in. Like, there are some people who think that this is the pinnacle of their career. No joke.
Ooh, no, no, not even close.
And two, this is just, you know, me and Mike's back and forth that we talk about on Facebook sometimes. Like, I'm currently watching American Dad a lot at the moment, and I stumbled into this analogy when we were planning this episode out. And you got to remember this. You agreed with me that it was the most apt comparison possible. Job for a Cowboy's career is a lot like how American Dad started. Really just, it started feeling like a lesser clone of a show that I already felt like shouldn't have been brought back in the first place. But what do you know? It's become Fox's second biggest cash cow. But once it started developing its own identity, it became a better written and funnier show. I really feel like Job for a Cowboy's career is exactly like this in that sense.
Yeah, that is a pretty apt description. As far as best tracks on this EP, I kind of have a soft spot for Relinquished, but like, and yes, Entities is like objectively the best song on this EP because it came with the reissue once they signed to Metal Blade. But outside of nostalgia, I think we can put the praise of this record to bed.
Yeah, and we're gonna throw in a little in before somebody comes in and goes, oh, you guys just hate deathcore. Here's what we're gonna do. Me and Mike, between the two of us, we decided to pick three deathcore bands that we both really like. So Mike, why don't you go first with your three? We picked one old school, one kind of middle era, and one modern.
So my three bands are, again, some of the most formative deathcore bands from that year of discovery. We have Despise Icon, The Acacia Strain, and Lorna Shore, arguably one of the best modern deathcore bands right now.
For me, my first pick is going to be one people will go, oh, they're not a deathcore band, they're a death grind band. Like, fuck off. Don't do that shit with me. If you're one of those types that is going to be one of those, oh, why do metalheads have to genre categorize everything and put everything into subgenres and then come and bitch at me for saying the Red Chord is a deathcore band, like, fuck off. And plus, second of all, they're a great band, so get over it. My second choice actually is going to be Whitechapel, just because, again, musical progression's compelling. They've consistently made good music. Even the lesser records in their back catalog are better than some people will probably give them credit for. And one of the best bands in music right now, I'm going with Fit for an Autopsy.
Hell yeah. One more band I wanted to throw in. Kind of tied for the Red Chord as like another formative band for me, Through the Eyes of the Dead.
And I'm just going to throw my point in there. Fit for an Autopsy might be a band that we cover on this series, so just throwing that out there. So I guess with that in mind, we now cut towards more 2006-ish when they are signed to Metal Blade Records. And in this case, it's basically the same lineup, almost sans one member quitting and Bobby Thompson joining on guitar. So this is basically the same team as the Doom EP. With all of that said in mind, A year later, we get the album Genesis, and my only real note to introduce this album is the band has officially arrived.
Yes, and honestly, Genesis is a pretty fitting title for this new direction of theirs.
So I really have 2 points that I'm just going to, actually three, my mistake. I have 3 points, one I already kind of briefly mentioned. So one, this is a concept record. So to kind of give a bit of a layman's terms description of it, the concept record is about the Verichip and how it basically plays a political, religious, and technological role in the downfall of mankind. I can't really think of many death metal albums that actually commit to a concept, let alone debuts, unless you can think of something.
Not for a debut. Like, you have to be really confident in your vision to come right out of the gate with a concept this ambitious.
And especially considering that it's not really marketed as much of a concept album. My second point I had already touched on, this is basically the same team as the Doom EP. But here's the thing, you could argue that, yeah, they probably had more money thrown at the project to have better sounding production, but honestly, it sounds amazing. The musicianship from the guitar solos, the blast beats, the way the vocals are produced, like everything sounds polished but still feels like it has some grit and dirt under its nails.
Yeah, this album is miles ahead of the Doom EP, and basically right from the opening track, it lets you know that this thing is legit.
And I guess with that in mind, just from that opening track alone, Johnny's vocals are so much better here. Like this kind of just lays the blueprint of how his vocals are going to be on the next 3 records. But like, Bearing the Serpent's Lamb is a really good telling sign that you're in for one hell of a half hour, and it's just going to be one amazing beating you're going to want to take again and again and again. Just, I don't know what else to say. Just honestly, the songwriting's just tighter, the playing's better, the production is better. Everything about this is just objectively better than what came before it. It's amazing.
Quick question. They are playing seven string guitars, right? Because you can just kind of tell with some of these riffs that and just like the guitar tone that they're using, that it feels like that's what they're using.
I'm not sure if that's what they are using or if they just tuned super low. The thing you have to bear in mind is this is the era where people start tuning lower and lower, so it wouldn't surprise me if either they did go with 7 strings or if they did decide to just tune to A and just be like, you know what, we'll just make the... That's my thing with really good production, is that yes, like I said, it should still have some grit to it, but at the same time, really great death metal will let you hear every note that hits you. Like, that's why what I commonly refer to as the Kill era of Cannibal Corpse, it really just lets you hear and feel every note that the band is playing. Another good example also, Black Dahlia Murder, should technically go without saying, I guess, but yeah, Black Dahlia Murder, you can literally hear every note being flawlessly played by them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, my thing too is just that, again, Johnny's vocals, they just sound like they're not demolishing his voice, and it just sounds like it's just easier to perform stuff off of Genesis. And when I say that, just bear in mind that easier to play and easier to sing in this case, you still are dealing with some pretty technical shit on this record. What songs do you have picked out for best on the record?
Obviously, Bearing the Serpent's Land, or Lamb.
Lamb.
And 2 others. Probably Martyrdom Unsealed, and the last track is also really good, Coalescing Prophecy.
You actually picked out 2 of mine, Bearing the Serpent's Lamb and Martyrdom Unsealed, but I also picked the two singles, Altered from Catechization and Embedded, I just feel like they're really good representations of the band and what you can expect from hearing the actual record. So, yeah, I hate to go for some of the obvious choices, but sometimes the obvious choices are the right choices.
Exactly.
With that in mind, a tour I regrettingly missed during this era of the band, I really wish I could have gotten to see Gigantour in 2008. Mike, care to hear the lineup?
What do we got?
Megadeth touring behind United Abominations, which is my favorite modern Megadeth album to this day. In Flames, Children of Bodom, and High on Fire.
Yeah, that is a pretty kick-ass lineup.
Oh, I don't care how much money I would have had to have spent to go to this show. I really would have loved that show. Even before I had gotten into the band, I probably would have had a great time. But I guess with that in mind, shortly thereafter, they get to work on a follow-up. But this time with just some minor lineup changes, bringing in Al Glassman of Despised Icon fame, who played on what I think me and Mike would probably consider their best record, The Ills of Modern Man. So with all of that in mind, and also swapping out a producer, in this case, they get none other than Jason Suecof. Mike, would you care to name some of the brilliant albums Jason Suecof has produced?
Okay, so we have a couple deathcore records that he's known for. Carnifex's World War X, and he previously did their EP Bury Me in Blasphemy, Whitechapel's Mark of the Blade, and I'm pretty sure he's stuck around with Job for a Cowboy pretty much up until their most recent. But the one that I have to talk about, because I'm me, is, oh, there's a couple here, but we talked about Black Dahlia Murder. Nocturnal is one of my favorite albums of all time, and again, came out in the golden year 2007.
And don't forget, he did Ascendancy by Trivium, so that has to obviously be brought up.
Oh, of course.
So with all of that said and in mind, so some minor lineup changes, a producer change, how does Ruination fare up? Honestly, I would say that this album is somehow even better than Genesis was. It really just takes everything that made Genesis great and just amps it up by 10. The musicianship, I don't know how it's even possible, but it got better. The lyrical content, it's as consistent as it's ever been. The production here, again, obviously, because we dedicated time to bring up Jason Suecof, obviously it sounds tight as hell. And the songs just benefit from all of these factors. Like, I almost could just copy-paste what I just said about Genesis and apply it here. But it's just a brilliant technical death metal album. And if you really think about it, it does hint at some of the direction they take on the next two.
Yeah, you know what? I'll ask you this. Would you consider Jason Suecof like as crucial to like the band as like, say, Rick Rubin was to Red Hot Chili Peppers, or some of those other like long running producers who have stuck around bands for multiple albums?
I would say the thing that makes Jason Suecof probably the best fit for this band is just that, again, he kind of just understands what makes the band as good as they are. In the case of a band like Trivium, it's just that Matt and Corey are phenomenal guitarists. Kind of goes without saying, but I mean, it's Trivium. They're phenomenal musicians. Just taking that and then just adding in phenomenal rhythm sections and just the complexity of the music as is, that's kind of what made those Trivium albums great and kind of a good fit with Job for a Cowboy, I guess, then. And then just add in the fact that everything that he's done, sans maybe Overcome by All That Remains, everything still feels like it at least has dirt under its nails, or doesn't feel like it needed to have been dicked around with in Pro Tools or something.
Yeah, that is the mark of a good producer, when they know how to get the best out of the band that they're working on. And yeah, I said this before, how it's going to be extremely difficult to rank the discography without just listing their records in reverse chronological order. But something that I said off air is, it's very rare to say that a band gets better with each album and actually mean it. That's how I feel about Ruination.
Oh, and before I really forget as well, another lineup change that came in place was that John the Charn Rice joins the band on here, and I think that the drumming on basically all of the subsequent albums just keeps getting better and better and better. Like, he's a phenomenal drummer, and it's kind of cool that he's in Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats now, which is like the total polar opposite of this band. So I just thought that was something cool to bring up.
That is pretty cool.
With that in mind, what are you gunning for with favorite tracks on this thing?
Ooh, the fact that I have to choose, I might just default with the singles, because like you said, talking about Genesis, sometimes the obvious answers are the correct ones. And I'm going to be repetitive about this, but I don't care. It's true. Every single opening track for these records is incredible. And yeah, Unfurling a Darkened Gospel is no exception.
Oh, even the music video's killer. Just the way they introduce the band, just going to a radio station just to promote that, yeah, they're going to be shooting a music video and they want fans to show up. Like, that's really awesome. But my favorite tracks, I'm gonna go with, I am gonna pick Ruination, just because it does kind of show a bit of the future direction the band is gonna take on the later records. But just the fact that it's this dark, sprawling, phenomenal song at 5 minutes, yeah, stellar track. And then my other two picks, I'm gonna go with Constitutional Masturbation. Like, even just blasting this at the gym doing squats, I really had to resist the urge not to just scream along to the lyrics out loud. It's an incredibly aggressive song, but it's also just, I almost can't even put it into words. Just go listen to this. There's a reason I had to include it in the intro to this episode. And then Regurgitated Disinformation also was awesome too. It just kind of just, it was that point in the record, honestly, man, that I just went, how is this band just getting heavier and heavier?
That was my third pick. Like, before I recorded, I went and put the band on shuffle. And when this song came up, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is the song where you pretty much know that this band is doing something special.
And then another one, this I wouldn't have been able to go to because this was at the point where the Mayhem Festival didn't tour up in Canada, especially Western Canada. But the 09 Mayhem lineup, if that came through your area, Mike, I would have been like, take me with you. Just to name off bands playing on the lineup, it was Slayer, Killswitch Engage, Trivium, All That Remains, God Forbid, Cannibal Corpse, Behemoth, Job for a Cowboy, Black Dahlia Murder, and Whitechapel.
I totally would have dropped everything and went to that show if it was playing near me.
Oh, like, that is one of those once in a lifetime lineups that, honestly, I really do miss touring festivals like this. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to put it into words, man. Just stuff like Ozfest and Mayhem not being a thing anymore kind of breaks my heart.
It is a bit depressing knowing that those are just not a thing anymore.
I guess with that in mind, so obviously we have a little bit of a gap in between Ruination and the next album. We end up getting two EPs. In one case, the Live Ruination EP, it literally is pretty much just a reskin of live tracks with the iTunes bonus track of Ruination, which just that cover of The Matter of Splatter by Exhumed is awesome. But my thing is just, I kind of found the live mixes of these songs kind of weird, and I always just ended up skipping Entombment of Machine anyways. But me and Mike really wanted to bring this up because Job for a Cowboy go through another obvious lineup change. In this case, they end up bringing Nick Shins. I'm just going to call him that because that's what he goes by on his YouTube channel name, and I'm not going to try fucking up his name. And Tony Sanicandro on guitar joined the band, and this is going to basically be their most current lineup to date. And just as a little bit of a teaser and a bit of a limited release, they put out the Gloom EP, which I almost wish this thing was a full-blown full-length because it's awesome.
Yeah. This is... I can't even put into words how amazing this EP is. I'm not even going to bother listing favorite tracks because it is only four tracks. So my favorite is Everything.
My highlight is probably going to be Plastic Idols. Like, the aggression on that song is just palpable. But my main thing is just, I really wish that the band had released this as part of a full length, because I think a lot more people would appreciate it more than they do just beyond, you know, fans like us. But it is a good teaser for what's to come out the following year, which is Demonocracy. And just somehow they did it a third time, guys. They literally made something that was even better than the previous two. I mean, Demonocracy is a phenomenal technical death metal record.
Yeah.
Just how do I even make this interesting? So just not just in technicality and lyrical content that they managed to outdo themselves. It's just in songwriting too. Like, I get it. These aren't typical verse, chorus, verse songs. They're tech death songs, but they're complex in the songwriting and a perfect example of sitting back with the liner notes, whether it's your copy on vinyl or on CD, and just absorbing what you're hearing. And it's just amazing front to back. Like, the playing is tight. Johnny sounds awesome. The Charn's drumming on it is fantastic. Like, it's just a phenomenal fucking record.
And I really want to put for a second the spotlight on Nick Shins. I don't think people talk enough about the bass playing in the latter half of this band's catalog. Like, when he gets moments to shine in the mix, he sounds amazing.
Oh, he is playing his ass off on this thing. And if you love his bass playing, Mike, I don't know if you remember the album. I'm just pulling it up in my iTunes right now. I wish I'd been more prepared. I don't know if you heard Conformicide by Havoc, but that's another really phenomenal record that he plays bass on.
Nice. I might have heard a track or two from that, but yeah. Havoc is just another band that more people should be listening to.
Unfortunately, if their singer did start falling for right-wing pandemic talking points. Yeah, all in the name of so-called freedom. But I, to kind of transition away from that, whether somebody wants to think it's a lazy transition or not, this album's insanely political. Like, obviously, Ruination was as well, but just the lyrical content on this thing is just scathing. Like, front to back, it's just aggressive. Like, I almost don't even know what to say at this rate, other than I really feel like this album deserves to be brought up with some of the greats, like Effigy of the Forgotten by Suffocation, Colored Sands by Gore Guts. Like, this belongs in the conversation of, like, best technical death metal records.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
What are you going to go with for favorite tracks? Because, like, I kind of don't want to just go all of them, but I have three in mind before that penultimate track.
So I'm going to take one of them off because it is it is the track that we're going to spend the majority of this record talking about. But again, being me, I have to shout out Children of Deceit. And then I would probably go Tongueless and Bound is just another incredible track. Trying to think of a third one, but I will save that for the end.
So obviously Children of Deceit just starts off mauling your face off, but Nourishment Through Bloodshed, that is a perfect song for me to go to a run to on my gym slay list. So I'm like, that one I have to bring up as well. Imperium Wolves is fantastic. Tongueless and Bound is also ridiculously heavy. The Deity Misconception, like just pretty much every song on this thing just proceeds to increase the heaviness and aggression while showing off the musical growth the band is capable of. And really, I don't think any more perfect of an example of how this band musically has grown is shown off better than what we'd call our best song on the album.
Yeah, so let's talk about the masterpiece that is Tarnished Gluttony.
So what makes this song sound so good? I took four specific notes, and I had to get Mike to watch the music video for it, which is going to be one of them. So my first note is the slower pace. If you really listen to this song, there is not one single blast beat section in this song, which just kind of gives it this massive feel in like just the general tone of it, the playing, and really just the way that opening chord hits you. It already feels like you're being just hit with a bag full of bricks on repeat. Like, this is where we're going to get Keona dropping a sample of what we're talking about. So Keona, play us the awesomeness that is this intro to this song, because oh my God, it really does feel like it hit you in the pit of your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Then my second point really is just the lyrical content. Like, at a cursory glance, one would make you think, okay, more anti-religious stuff, but it's extremely political in its delivery when you think about it. It's really about blind faith in the government and the monetary system, to use Johnny's words himself, and just the way it's articulated. It just makes it sound not so much like boo-hoo, I was forced to go to Sunday school, I don't like religion, wah, wah. It's more intelligently written.
Would you say that the music video, as far as like the tone of the song, kind of accurately represents like that what's the word? The dourness of it.
I am going to save my commentary on the music video for a minute from now, but I honestly didn't see the music video until we started planning this out, so I don't really have a good answer for that. But my third point really is that the mood of this song really makes it feel like it could be in a movie as a literal soundtrack to the apocalypse, like especially for that last 2 minutes of the song. It just feels like the world is going off this deep end and that there's no chance of stopping this inevitable threat. Yeah, it hits hard with its messaging and how bleak it is, but sometimes stuff like that's just really compelling to listen to, and sometimes it can be a motivating thing to make you want to do better.
And that's why I love this being the closer of the record. Like, yeah, it's not the most triumphant final song, but that's not really that's not really the point that they're going for.
And really, if you think about it, that's how an album should end. It should make you feel like you just listened through an experience. Like, I really don't like when bands either just have a generic fade out to the album and just make it feel like, eh, here's another song. We could have written something that gives it the feeling of finality, but no, Job for a Cowboy went out of their way to make something that makes it feel like this is the end of the record. You just experienced 40 minutes of some of the heaviest music that you'll hear all year. And then the fourth point, we can get into the music video.
Yeah, this music video is it's honestly pretty upsetting to watch.
It's dour. So to give everybody a description, so basically the video for Tarnished Gluttony shows who we assume is a father carrying his dead son on his back. That's a good chunk of the video until he comes to this tree stump and he ends up discovering this squid for some reason. But then the music in the video stops when who we assume to be the dad gets a box cutter out, and I will just kind of let everybody's brains connect the dots what he decides to do with the box cutter, and he replaces his guts with the squid.
Yeah.
So here's my thing, Mike. Maybe I'm just desensitized. Maybe I know too much in just how unnecessarily gruesome a lot of extreme horror can be. I mean, we obviously know what my worst movie of all time is, but considering that this video came out around roughly the same time as Cattle Decapitation's Forced Gender Reassignment video, and maybe even, I believe, Dying Fetus's video for Die With Integrity came out around the same time, I'm not entirely too certain. But no, the thing with this video for me is just that it's artistically done in that it's obviously portraying the message of the song on some level, but it's also kind of Lovecraftian in its own weird way.
Yeah.
And that, even to quote Johnny, since I have the Loudwire article open from when the video came out, the point is acting blindly in faith to a Christian deity is just as absurd as worshiping squid-like monsters from space who live under the sea. So just obviously, it's a very gruesome video, but if you're like me and you've obviously seen worse things out there, this will probably be an easy, well, I'm going to use easy in quotation marks here, watch.
That's the thing. It's not that this is the goriest video I've seen. It's literally just the tone that makes this upsetting. And I would say that the tone pretty accurately matches the song, just that there is just no joy to what, again, we can only assume this father figure is doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is a case where my best analogy I can go with is if Forced Gender Reassignment by Cattle Decapitation is, I don't want to compare something I love to death like Cattle Decapitation, which is one of my favorite modern bands, to my worst movie of all time in any capacity. I have no idea where I was really going with that analogy, but I'll go for a lesser extreme. If the Forced Gender Reassignment video is Martyrs, which I'm big hot take, I think Martyrs is incredibly overrated. If that video is Martyrs, then the video for Tarnished Gluttony is Inside, the other 2007 New French Extremity horror movie. I just think that this is a video that I can recommend to people. Obviously, I would issue it with a content warning, but it is something worth checking out if you're already a fan of the band and you're already into Lovecraftian horror, I guess, then, in this case.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
In this case, also, I'm going to issue a bit of a correction. Die with Integrity's video did not come out around the same time. I was thinking of the wrong Dying Fetus album. But anyways, the tours that I wish I could have seen Job for a Cowboy on, and I've got two of them this time. One is the 2012 Summer Slaughter Tour with Cannibal Corpse, Between the Buried Me, The Faceless, Periphery, Veil of Maya, Goat Whore, and Exhumed, and Cerebral Bore.
That is an incredible lineup.
Oh, this is a case where it did come through Canada, and it happened at Heavy Montreal. I so wish I was going to that festival around this time period. And then a year later, they continued another awesome touring festival with the 2013 Mayhem Fest lineup. Unfortunately, Five Finger Death Punch are on the bill. But you have Rob Zombie, Mastodon, and Amon Amarth on the main stage. And Mike, guess who Job for a Cowboy was opening for?
Oh, who were they?
Machine fucking Head.
Okay. Yep.
That alone should make this tour a must-see. And that and also Children of Bodom were also on the tour, and Battlecross and Huntress as well. Unfortunately, though, this does kind of bring a bit of an earlier conclusion that I think either of us were expecting. I did pull this up just to kind of bring it up as a reference point and to kind of tie it in with the 2013 Mayhem Fest. This unfortunately would be the last time Job for a Cowboy would tour actively, where later in 2013, John the Charn Rice would quit the band. And I say all of this because not even a year before, when Johnny was just promoting Demonocracy, said that if any current member of Job for a Cowboy quits, we're done as a band.
That's I'm glad that from what it sounds like they're still together, but to lose a member like John Rice at that time, yeah, that's gotta hurt.
Well, I get it. They're still technically together, but on that same note, well, we obviously have one more album to talk about in mind, but just given how less active they would end up becoming for the next 10 years, it really feels like we were robbed of more great music kind of as a result of him leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But with that in mind, with John Rice out of the band in late 2014, we get to the big one. One that I would almost be willing to go out on a limb for and say this belongs in a conversation for some of the best metal ever made. In November 2014, we got Sun Eater.
This album, like, if you, for some reason, have never listened to Job for a Cowboy and aren't really that big into death metal, but will once in a while peek in and check out some of the more progressive acts, Sun Eater would be perfect for you.
So kind of what I've been mentioning throughout the past couple of records, it really is as if everything that was great about the band had been building to this point. You can really also hear elements of various bands throughout the track list. You and I both pointed out that some of the bass work reminded you of Cynic as well. There's little bits of Mastodon here, bits of Atheist and The Faceless. Sun Eater isn't just let's do our last three albums again. This is let's go to brand new territory. And this almost feels like something that could belong on a more progressive-minded tour, like either a Dream Theater tour or a Between the Buried and Me tour, almost, I would argue.
Or Opeth?
I don't know about Opeth. I don't think it's folksy enough to be on that level with Opeth necessarily.
Fair.
Maybe huge maybe would be Mastodon.
Yeah. I think Mastodon probably be a more realistic choice, but yeah, like hearing those sort of influences on this record is honestly just really cool. It shows how much like growth the band has undergone over at this point. It would have been 9 years since the Doom EP.
And really, I have three notes that I really want to bring up the most. So one, actually four, excuse me. So my first note is the bass work. Nick Shins really has outdone himself on this album. There's so much complicated fretwork going on this record. It's very high up in the mix, driving the music with the rhythm section, but it also weirdly weaves bits of melody into it. And I say that in the best possible way.
Oh, yeah.
My like, second note. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, jumping ahead to some of my favorite tracks, Son of Nihility, that has some of my favorite bass lines from Nick Shins.
I was actually going to kind of tie it into the song after, which is The Stone Cross, but for me, my second point was just going to be the shorter songs on here. Normally on prog albums, the shorter songs amidst the longer ones are usually relegated for atmosphere if you're Opeth, or just there to kind of introduce the next song, like with Dream Theater, really. Here it's more, let's literally give you a blast of energy and give you some of the best playing you'll hear on a record that whenever, in this case in 2014. But to kind of just go into my next point, point three, the long songs on here, which granted the songs don't really max out until about 6 minutes, 30 seconds. The long songs on here are fantastic. They really do make you feel like you're going on some journey listening to these tracks. And somehow they manage to weave choruses on here that are fantastic. Like, I'm going to get Kiona to drop in another sample in this case. The chorus to Son of Nihility. Let's go.
Something else I like about this record compared to other prog records is, as far as I know, this band doesn't really overstay their welcome. Like, I'm pretty sure the opening track, Eating the Visions of God, and their closer, Worming Nightfall, are some of the longest tracks that they've ever recorded. Like they haven't done anything in like the double digits yet.
Yeah, no, they haven't. You are right. None of these tracks end up feeling like a chore to have to get through. It's not like Dream Theater's The Astonishing, where it's just this 2-hour epic. It's like, no, here's a 46-minute experience, 9 songs, reasonable lengths. Enjoy it as a front-to-back experience, or just enjoy individual tracks. And my fourth point I was going to bring up as well, who ended up replacing John Rice on this album, you ask? It was Danny Walker from Intronaut, and I really can't think of somebody who's able to fill John's shoes on this record the way he does. Like, if you really think about it, too, I don't know if you noticed this, Mike, no blast beats come in until The Stone Cross.
And you know what? I honestly don't think I missed them.
Honestly, the fact that the songs were as heavy and fantastically written as they are, yeah, like, I'm not gonna bitch too much. I mean, I love having my blast beats on a death metal record, obviously, but the fact that it's just woven into the music as well as it is, and it's fantastically played, I really do wish the band didn't just decide, screw it, we're not going to tour anymore. I really wish that they had found some way either to do more select dates, at least maybe, but it's a bummer that this didn't get its time to shine.
Do you want to talk about some of the additional musicians on the record?
Oh, the very obvious one that we have to bring up is our good friend Corpse Grinder from Cannibal Corpse on the weirdly Mastodon-like opening. Like, is it just me, or did the Synthetic Seas opening remind you a lot of, like, Crack the Sky era Mastodon?
I could hear a little bit of that influence. And yeah, it is weird that of all the tracks for Corpse Grinder to appear on, this is the one that he chose.
But I'm not gonna bitch too much about that, because this thing's fucking heavy.
Oh yeah, like I'm just happy anytime I get to hear Corpse Grinder, like, at all, whether it's in Cannibal Corpse or as a guest.
He's one of the most likable figures in metal. And man, again, it's just a bummer that we didn't get something like maybe a Job for a Cowboy Cannibal Corpse tour, maybe in the next year. That would have been something awesome.
Yeah.
So normally I really wanted this episode to be more planned out, and I really do feel like we did a great job with, you know, kind of planning out the general structure of it. But in a not so subtle hint, the only way I can describe what we get for the next decade is Nathan Explosion. Please tell our listeners what they got for the next decade in terms of Job for a Cowboy.
Nothing.
It really is a shame how after what I would consider to be their magnum opus, they just kind of stop.
It really does feel like we were robbed of more great music from this band. I mean, just looking at their Wikipedia page, it looks like after Ruination, the band just started charting lower and lower on the Billboard charts. And I understand death metal's not exactly something that you're gonna see blowing up the Billboard top 10 exactly, but at the same time, it just feels like, man, why didn't we get more music from this band? But it's also a mix of real life coming into play. Some members ended up going back to school. Some members ended up starting families. So one part of me does understand why, but at the same time, it just kind of sucks that that's the end of their story, really.
Or is it?
Before we do that, they did play at least one show, which is, this would have been the closest I would have been able to have gone to see them. Mike, have you heard of the Modified Ghost Festival?
I vaguely remember this, but who is on the lineup?
So just to kind of give you a bit of a lowdown on what it is, it's a festival in Vancouver, which is a province over from me, where it's basically one huge club show where some of the best metal ever made, some of the best bands on the planet come and just play a festival in this tiny venue. And Job for a Cowboy played this festival in 2016 with Dillinger Escape Plan, Suffocation, Cattle Decapitation, Misery Index, Toxic Holocaust, Revocation, Intronaut, Power Trip, Archspire, Allegion, and Scale the Summit.
Damn.
Yeah, you basically were going to need a spine replacement from all the headbanging you were going to do that weekend. But yeah, kind of unfortunately, this just seemed where the band would just leave us for the longest time. I do want to bring up one project that did happen, which was Serpent of Gnosis. I don't know if you ever had the chance to jam this record, Mike.
I unfortunately didn't.
So Serpent of Gnosis was a side project that Johnny Davey started with a good chunk of Job for a Cowboy, mostly Tony and Al, but the other members were Max Laval from Black Dahlia Murder and also Despised Icon. Notice how this name comes up a lot, people. You really should be listening to them. And Darren, who used to be a member of Arsis and Deeds of Flesh. Basically, just they were a grind, a kind of a death grind band that really has only existed for one album. But for the past 4 years, this really was the closest we were going to get to new Job for a Cowboy music. I mean, if you haven't heard it yet, can't recommend it enough. It's ridiculously heavy, reminds you of what made Job for a Cowboy great, but just less progressive minded.
It sounds like one of those records I have to just play immediately.
Honestly, it's only like 20 some minutes long and you're not going to be disappointed. But I guess with all of that in mind, we do have something to bring up, because this did happen just within the past month, and I almost was dumb enough to go to this. If you've been paying attention to metal news lately, Mike, how happy were you to not go to Blue Ridge Rock Festival 2 weeks ago?
I honestly feel like I dodged a bullet by, like, after everything I've heard about what went down at Blue Ridge, I feel bad for the people who were there and clearly did not have a good time due to some awful weather and not great planning on their part.
In my case, I'm just gonna say that while the lineup for it looked fantastic, I think that I'm not gonna say too much and bore our listeners in this case. All I can really recommend is go check out Tank the Tech's video he put out shortly after Blue Ridge happened. He can do a better job describing what really happened across those 2 days of what was supposed to be a 4-day festival than I ever could. But, you know, just to kind of describe how I felt, I almost would have gone just for Job for a Cowboy, honestly. Like, the lineup itself looked fantastic, even with all of the shitty bands like Five Finger Death Punch and Attila on the lineup. I would have had many other bands I could have gone to see and had a good time seeing. Like, I could have gone to see Machine Head instead, and I would have had a much better time. But we say all of this in mind because shortly before Blue Ridge happened, Job for a Cowboy decided to be awesome and put out a new song.
Yep. The Agony Sweep Seeping Storm.
This song is literally like running into an old friend you knew years ago and meeting up like nothing ever changed. I don't know if you feel the same way I do, but I feel like that's the best compliment I can give this song.
It really doesn't skip a beat. Like, it almost sounds like it could have been like a track off of Sun Eater. This is the 10th track that they just never released.
Oh, and to bring up some other little gaps, I guess we can fill in for people. Who's going to be playing drums on this alleged new Job for a Cowboy album? It's Naveen Copperwise from Entheos, and also drummed on Machine Head's newest album. So they already have a pretty fantastic drummer playing on this album whenever it comes out. But the fact that it's also going to be a concept record really excites me.
Yeah, because concept records for this band is, I don't want to say it's their bread and butter, but, you know,
they can do it well.
They can.
Like, just everything that is great about Job for a Cowboy, from the riffs, grooves, great musicianship, they're all as brilliant as they've ever been. And again, to go back to it, Johnny Davies' vocals on here, despite not having toured for years, his voice just sounds fantastic. Like, he's just not missing a beat at all. And some of these bass patterns are super technical. The soloing on it's amazing. It's just, even the music video is just something I think Mastodon would do more than something influenced by Suffocation.
I love how they're continuing leaning into the more progressive influences. I really hope now they have like a really rock solid lineup, you know, with Naveen helping out, like as a session musician, that like this just kind of continues that trajectory of each album like being superior to what came before.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's pretty much Job for a Cowboy's career in a nutshell, is just that they just improved. They even would say it in interviews that they would nitpick things about the previous album that they didn't like and just go, okay, how can we make this better while still maintaining aggression and heaviness, but also maintaining levels of integrity that is just amazing that they've stayed committed to.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's honestly why I love this band, is they have integrity where other bands, like, not so much.
Yeah, whereas some bands will either try to cater to radio or experiment in ways that they have no business experimenting in and failing miserably, or just weren't that great to begin with. Job for a Cowboy decided, you know what, we're, like I mentioned when talking about the Doom EP and how Johnny had been offered to do tours playing that EP in full, they refused to do it just because they've grown and done more exciting things as a result.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait to hear this new record whenever it comes out, whether it's this year or next year. The fact we're getting new Job for a Cowboy sometime in the near future, I'm never going to complain about.
Me neither. Like, here, like, even just finding out that we have this new single, it was just a delight to, you know, to like to hear that news.
And I guess with all of that in mind, cool if I drop in where people can actually buy all of their records.
Yeah, I would like to know, and I want the audience to know where people can actually support this band.
So obviously we want to promote actually buying the CD, vinyl, and, you know, potentially tape if they decide to go that route with promoting this new record. So currently you can get Job for a Cowboy's catalog on Amazon if you want to go that route. But if you want to get the complete catalog, the best way you can actually go and get the CD and vinyl where it gets actively repressed is Metal Blade's indie merch store. Currently they have represses of Ruination and Demonocracy up right now that I'm personally going to try and pick up at some point. But they do active represses of, like, if you want the Doom EP, if that's your thing, hey, by all means, go for it. But I'm beyond wanting to be a completionist, I mostly just want Genesis and Sun Eater.
Yeah. Once I do start actually collecting records, those are probably the two that I'm desperately trying to get my hands on.
Oh, currently I've got every one of them on CD sans the Doom EP. So, and they also actually have done represses of the Gloom EP. So that's awesome that that's available. So
yes,
if you want to pick that up and hear all of those four amazing songs, then yeah, we cannot recommend the Gloom EP enough. Even the Live Ruination EP, they've done represses for. And I guess with all of that in mind, that concludes why we love Job for a Cowboy.
Yeah, as we have continued to stress, this is one of those times where we can't really rank the records, because again, it would just be their discography in reverse chronological order.
Pretty much. And even if I were to say which album should you start with, I would say start with Genesis and then just go to Sun Eater.
Agreed. Now, before we wrap things up, want to tease what our next project is?
Yes, and I sincerely apologize because we were talking about actually doing a full band's discography review for the longest time since we wrapped up our Rise and Squall of Limp Bizkit series, but honestly, just given that 2023 has been kind of a rough year, I've been pretty exhausted with my last day job and just getting used to a new day job. But our next project is going to be our Motley Crue series. We're going to cover every Motley Crue album from Too Fast for Love up until Saints of Los Angeles. So be on the lookout for that sometime down the road, and we'll give it a more flashier name when the time comes.
Until then, Nick, where can everyone find you online?
Super Saiyan Death Metal God on Instagram. I mainly post album covers, movies I'm watching, video games I'm playing, and just go send me some binge likes to help me fight off the bullshit algorithm.
And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. You can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and the site formerly known as Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Renegade Pop Culture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Jukebox. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.